When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here we go.
Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. I'm Andrew Musgrove and it's time for our match preview. Leeds are the visitors to St James's Park on Friday night in front of the Sky Sports cameras. And as usual, there's been plenty to talk about regarding Newcastle United. I'm joined by John Gibson and later in the show you'll hear from Joe Donoghue, who covers Leeds for Leeds Live. John, Steve Bruce has just held his press conference. The questions have been about the fans who have called for him to go. There was banners against Manchester United. And I'll just read out what he had to say first and foremost and then get your thoughts on it. He was asked then about fan chants calling for him to go. And he told reporters, "It's always difficult. I'd be sick if I said I quite enjoyed it. The frustration is if you don't get the results, then ultimately the head coach bears the brunt. I have to accept that results haven't been good enough." What I would say to that, John, feels a bit like deja vu because we've been here before, haven't we?
Totally. We live in this particular world. We live in it with Steve Bruce and we lived in it before Benitez with the other managers from McLaren to Kinnear. It is part of the Newcastle United world under Mike Ashley.
We will discuss what happened after the game against Manchester United at Old Trafford, just briefly, because I know a lot of people want to get your views on it. Of course, I am talking about the fact that Steve Bruce hit out at the Chronicle for negativity, and he said the fans are the way they are because of the negativity and our newspaper. I mean, John, you've had your battles with managers down the years.
Yeah, you've probably, it's part of the job.
Yeah. I mean, what do you make of what Bruce said?
Well, it follows a traditional pattern. I'm not just talking about Steve Bruce. I'm talking about the whole time I've covered Newcastle. If a team wins, it's down to the manager being a genius, and if a team loses, it's down to the press being negative or the fans being negative. I mean, I'm not certain what Steve Bruce was expecting when you think we've played 4 games, 12 points, we've got 1, and we're out of the League Cup losing at home. I mean, if that is being the Chronicle are negative when they should be positive after those results, it is a joke. It is an absolute nonsense. What it does reveal is the obvious. A manager that talks about being thick-skinned when he's really thin-skinned and feeling the pressure, not only of results, but being hung out to dry by Mike Ashley, etc., etc., for putting his foot in it every time he talks. He tends, bless him, to say something that makes it even worse than it was originally. And he's just a guy under pressure. And under pressure, you just hit out at the nearest obstacle. And the nearest obstacle was the bloke in front of him asking the questions, who happened to be from the Evening Chronicle.
Now, there was a question in the press conference today regarding his future, and he was asked if he's had any conversations with those above, given there's not many above. Lee Charnley is probably the name. And he said, he replied to reporters and said, "It's not all about me. I'm here to only do what I think is best for the club, and that is managing it as best I can and keep us moving along. That's for other people to answer that. I will continue to do my best. I'm never going to walk away from the challenge."
Two things immediately hit me there. He says it's not all about him, but I'm afraid it is. If people and fans can't get at Charnley and Ashley because they live in a remote castle on the top of a mountain, then Steve Bruce is the next long. And it is all about managers. There's absolutely no question, because the manage. The significant thing he said in that lot, which he has always said and we know that he lives by, is that he's not going to walk away. There's absolutely no chance of that. He will remain manager under Ashley for as long as Ashley allows that to happen. And how long's a piece of string?
And he says he would do what is best for the club. And we're getting ahead of ourselves, totally hypothetical. We kind of understand where Mike Ashley and Newcastle's approach is to this, that they're going to back Steve Bruce until they really have no other option. We saw last season when they lost to Brighton. I mean, any other manager probably wouldn't even got to Brighton at that stage, but he did do. He lost. He kept his job. Turned it around in the end, towards the end of the season. It's still only 7 wins in 34 games, though. And a defeat to Friday on at Leeds on Friday, again, most managers would be under immense pressure. But you get the feeling that he's going to be backed. Some would argue that what is best for the club would, at some point, if results continue this way, is to actually walk away.
Yes, I think that's what most fans would say. That would be best for the club. Would you please walk away? What he means really is he'll do what's best for Steve Bruce, which is remain in the job, and then he will do his best in that job to try to turn it round. But, I mean, we know the Mike Ashley style. If a manager is going to go at all, the odds are he's going to go right near the death when it seems inevitable we might go down. And then, of course, it is too late for anybody to come in, as we know with Shearer, as we know with Benitez. It's too, after McLaren was sacked originally, it's too late to be able to save the club in that situation. But, I mean, if it's at all possible, Mike Ashley's more disinterested in Newcastle than he ever has been, if that's possible. And therefore, we know that he's not going to look for a confrontational situation. Get rid of the manager, you've got to then pay him up. Then his two right-hand men, and I'm excluding Jones because Jones doesn't go round with Bruce job to job, they're going to go as well, they're going to be paid, and then you've got to move somebody in or go along with Jones. He isn't going to look. That, to him, is just an irritation. It is more workload that he doesn't want because he's now interested in Newcastle.
Again, I don't want to focus on the hypothetical situations, but I did put out last night that we were, again, recording our preview, and a few people got in touch with some questions, and one of them from Dan Corcoran asks John, if Bruce walks or is sacked in the next couple of weeks, which manager would you like to see take over?
Great question, and I haven't looked at it in depth because I know he's not going to walk and I know he's not going to be sacked. And that's the fact of the matter. I think what most fans would expect to happen, there's a difference between what you expect to happen and what you want to happen, is they would probably expect that Jones would step in as some sort of caretaker and make it easy for Ashley by being able to do that from within the club, which he's done in the past. And the worry of that can be, and I don't know, but the worry of that can be that a terrific number two doesn't necessarily make a terrific number one. I mean, McLaren had a great reputation as a number two to Ferguson at Manchester United, but infinitely proved he wasn't the number one. And there is an argument that Graham Jones, his standing was so high as a coach that he inevitably got a manager's job, and he got it at Luton, and it didn't work. And Rob Lee, who we all know, one of the entertainers, was very scathing to me about the job Jones did as manager at Luton. Now, I know Rob had an axe to grind because his son was there and his son didn't benefit from Jones being manager, but the results weren't good either. So, you know, there's a problem there. I don't think we're going to have to face who gets a job, but I mean, people would immediately look at Cooper and look at Howe and look at people of that level and say, you know, let's have one of those. But the question is, if you are a young manager like Howe or Cooper and you're offered the Newcastle job under Ashley, and it's well documented that your hands are tied and your legs are tied and you're thrown in the tine, would you? And your next job has got to go well with Howe, because he left Bournemouth relegation. Would you actually want this job? Yes, you would, if the owner wasn't Ashley, but would you want the job at the moment? That comes into play as well. There'll be plenty of managers who are very average or beneath, below average, that would walk here under Ashley, as Steve Bruce did. But are they the ones that we want?
But Steve Bruce, I mean, the reality is, like you say, we don't think he'll get the sack until things are really, 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 really bad. If they can get any worse than they did last season, like I mentioned, against Brighton. But he should be getting more out of this squad. You know, this squad is better than where it is. I know we've got complaints about the transfer window, and Steve Bruce rightly can be frustrated that he wasn't backed. He was hung out to dry. You know, he didn't get the loan players, which he felt would improve. And we've gone over that, obviously, with the verdict podcast on the transfer window. But again, we saw against Old Trafford, I mean, they did all right. Against Manchester United, they did all right, but then they got beat 4-1. They should be. They are not a squad that should be in the relegation zone. They're just above the relegation zone in terms of the talent and ability. Yeah. But he should be getting better out of this side.
I think that, to a great extent, is true. They're not a great squad, and they're a squad in vital positions that lack legs at the back and at midfield, and that is a huge minus. So there are things wrong with it. But they should be able to finish fourth bottom. And Steve Bruce would argue, well, we can still finish fourth bottom or fifth bottom or sixth bottom. And, of course, that's true at this stage. But what concerns me about the current situation, that Newcastle have let in, 12 goals in 4 Premier League games? And our manager is a renowned centre-half and skipper of Manchester United in their great era, early great era under Ferguson. You would think he could organise the back. The same players, incidentally, didn't leak like that under Benitez. So you could argue they are better. But I mentioned in one of my articles in the Chronicle recently, I think there's significant players at Newcastle that have gone backwards in recent times. You can mention the two Longstaffs, you can mention Almiron before he revived himself dramatically at Man United and did terrific, but has generally struggled. There's quite a few who have found it tough. Manquillo couldn't get in the side, and then suddenly gets in the side of Manchester United and does terrific, but he couldn't get in the side. There's a lot of players that haven't progressed in a significant number that's gone backwards.
I just want to ask you there about being a brilliant defender. Just give us a really brief insight into the likes of what the teams in there, like Joe Harvey, or what, you know, Bob Moncur's Carlisle side or Hart side were. You know, two great kind of defensive players. Were their defensive team, were their teams defensive, and did they lack goals?
They weren't. I wouldn't say that Joe Harvey's team was defensive when you can beat a team the quality of Ruud Spes-Doza, scoring 6 goals over the 2 legs. But the one thing Joe did, his defence didn't leak. He didn't let in a lot of goals. They say, don't they, that if you are a football coach, the easiest thing to coach is not to concede. The hardest thing to coach is to get goals at the other end, to be clever enough to open up defences and get goals at the other end. I mean, Benitez organised the back, which is virtually the same back as we have now, not to leak goals. Gets accused of being defensive, because if you don't leak goals and you're not scoring 6, you're going to be a defensive coach. But you just get a concern that if Steve Bruce can't organise a defence, having spent so many years at Manchester United, successful years, and been successful himself, he can't organise a defence to keep a clean sheet, then, you know, what chance have we got?
Go back into the quotes then from Steve Bruce in his press conference. On team news, he says, unfortunately, it's a bit too quick for Callum Wilson and Jonjo Shelvey. Everybody from the weekend has come through, though, so thankfully everyone else is okay.
Yeah, well, we need as many bodies as we can, so we're pleased about that. The great cynics would say that you can pick the 3 central defenders at the back from 6 or maybe 7, maybe only 6 with Dummett out. And it doesn't really matter what shuffle you do, it doesn't work, because we've shuffled the back like a deck of cards this season, and we've still leaked goals. I know that we've touched, Andrew, many times on what happened or didn't happen in the transfer market. But for me, and I was shouting about it, and it's I'm not wanting credit for myself and shouting about it. I was shouting about what every Newcastle United fan was shouting about, which we could all see. In the summer, we said we need a centre-half and we need cover for Wilson. What happens? We don't sign a centre-half, even on loan. And that wasn't down to Bruce. Bruce wanted one. But we didn't sign a centre forward. Bruce amazingly told us we didn't need one. We had enough good bodies in there. Good gracious me. So what happens? We know that Callum Wilson's injury prone. And yet within 3-4 games of the start of the season, he's out for a little while, a few games. And that is crucial. And we haven't got a centre forward. Because he won't play Dwight Gayle for some reason. He's told us Joe Linton's not a centre forward, and we know that. Although he may have to play there. Etc. etc. So we are paying a huge cost right now against Leeds tomorrow night for not signing a centre forward and for not signing a centre half. We're not going to score regularly without Wilson. We're going to continue to let goals in.
On the defensive side, he was asked about how many goals have conceded. They've conceded 12 goals. Interesting, Leeds have conceded 11, so I'm sure a few people are expecting a game full of goals on Friday, although I fear Newcastle fans are probably worried. They're probably going to be watching this through the hands.
Yep.
On the defence, he said, only a few teams have scored more than us. I've just done a quick count there. I think it's 6 have scored more than 5, and there's a few teams on 5. And then he says, working all week on the defensive side. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that we're conceding too much. We've worked tirelessly on it, and we do until we get the balance right. Keeps mentioning balance. He's mentioned balance over the last 18 months time and time again. It's kind of a buzzword. I'm wondering when we eventually get to see that balance correct. I also think, I mean, Paul Dummett, you know, everyone, well, most people thought as his career progressed he would come into that defence, that centre back role.
Yep.
When he did do last season, you know, the injuries aside, he performed very, very well. I thought he would be a huge boost, I think, into this back line, because at the moment Newcastle are just struggling with Kieran Clarke, Lascelles. I mean, Hayden, I mean, first of all, it's a huge loss to not have Dummett back, but also Hayden at centre-back. John, what do you make of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, all the centre-backs we've got, and all of a sudden Hayden plays centre-back and Kraft plays centre-back before him. It just shows that we can't defend, and let's throw all the balls in the air and see what comes down. I mean, if we talk purely about defending as opposed to getting the ball and coming out the back and starting attacks, the best defender in the club, without a shadow of doubt, is Paul Dummett. At actually defending and keeping your concentration. He is a huge miss to be the left of the three. The skipper is struggling. He is, when I was talking earlier with people that's gone backwards, he is a classic example of somebody that's done that. And quite frankly, I mean, is there a three that against Leeds that you would be happy in there and say, oh, well, that's a backdoor look? For me, there isn't. You can throw the three together. And talking about balance, these defenders have been here virtually the whole time Bruce has been here. If we can't get the balance by now, how long does it take to get the balance right? I mean, it is a buzzword, and that's all it is. It is a huge worry. Yes, it's a match between the two worst defenses in the Premier League. The trouble is that they've probably got more going forward than we have when we haven't got Wilson, and that is a worry. And one of my concerns as well, Andrew, is that with not having Wilson, with the goals going in at the other end, Sam Maximum is carrying an awful lot on his shoulders, like the guy that's got the ability, the guy that'll do a trick, the guy that's quick. Will he get us out of jail? One of the things that always worries me about the Saint is that he has got this ability to become frustrated. He's got this ability to say, what on earth, and to be lying on the ground, throwing his hands in several different directions. And under these circumstances, with Wilson, you know he'll keep running the channel, keep running the channel, keep going, regardless of what's happening in the match. Sam Maximum is likely to stack his hand if the tide is so relentless the other way. And if that happens at the moment with Wilson out, we're going nowhere, and we're going nowhere fast.
So on the big decisions this weekend, John, for Steve Bruce's who he starts in net, Freddie Woodman or Carl Darlow. Lots of reports that Caldwell will come in. Woodman will be dropped after his performance against Manchester United. At fault for probably the first goal, second one, questionable whether it was totally his fault, but that's a debate to be had. I think it would be harsh to drop Woodman, but then a lot of people are saying, well, Darlow is better quality. We've also got the good news, Steve Bruce confirmed today that hopefully Martin Dubravka will be back training next week, which is great news, so hopefully not too long until he's in contention. But in terms of Darlow or Woodman, Steve Bruce says he'll make his decision within the next 24 hours. Well, he's going to have to because kickoff's at 8 o'clock on Friday, which I also think is a little bizarre. Surely you should already have made your decision. Maybe he's just playing the media game there.
I think he has made the decision.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who do you think he's picked then?
That's a good question. First of all, on the two goals he let in, he looked horrendous on the first one, which clipped his leg and went straight across the goal. The second one, he's going to take criticism because he was nutmegged. And when a keeper's nutmegged, they immediately say, good gracious, keep your legs closed and you've saved the ball. I think that it might be harsh for Woodman if he went, but it was harsh for Darlow when he went last season. But it was even harsher the way he felt, we found out, by the way. Woodman had this huge reputation as a young goalkeeper who many have forecast would end up in an England team at some time in the foreseeable future. He hasn't massively impressed distribution-wise or commanding his area throughout the four games. He's been unfortunate in letting in so many goals because he's what was in front of him. But I would, if you put me on the spot and I wanted Dubravka to come back in place of Darlow last season, I would play Darlow.
It's interesting, you mentioned his distribution there. He seems a little bit nervous to give it to the centre-backs. And I
well,
wonder,
wouldn't you be?
Yeah, I would. But do you think that's a bit of a game plan there from Newcastle where they want to start playing it out from the back? Because constantly you're seeing at least two centre-backs either side of him.
And he's
pushing them forward. I think that shows a test of character to say, actually, look, I don't care what we've been learning and training. I'm not giving it to you in this situation. You know, he's standing up. But also, I do question, I mean, that it must be part of the game plan to want to play out that way.
Oh, yeah, because they wouldn't stand. I mean, I know that virtually every team's doing it now. And that was why Joe Hart's career come to an end at Man City, because he couldn't do that. He couldn't play it out from the back with any sort of safety. The one thing you definitely know is Woodman either hasn't got faith in his two wide players standing there, or he hasn't got faith in himself if he's dropped in and thinks, I want this ball as far away from my goal as it's possible to be. Because one of the worries with Newcastle is when we do get the ball in open play, we give it away so cheaply and we're back under the cosh. And if a keeper kicks long, you're just looking at his centre forward being able to hold it up and this sort of thing Andy Carroll in his pump did so well. Because otherwise it's going to come back straight at you. Anyway, I don't think it'll be the problem tomorrow night because I think Darlow will play.
I think, although I said it would be harsh, it probably would be best to put Darlow in because I do think they're going to concede a lot of goals tomorrow. His confidence is already going to be hit after what happened against Manchester United. And then if he goes against Leeds and, you know, it's a 3-0, 4-0, 4-1, whatever. Because I do think Leeds will run a bit wild in the end as they did last season against Newcastle. And that's just going to absolutely rip them to shreds. So, you know, maybe it is best for Darlow, an experienced head against what will be an attacking side. But then again, you could put the same argument around and say if Leeds put in three or four against Darlow, then that's going to be a hit to him. It's fun being a Newcastle United fan, isn't it, John?
It's fun being Newcastle United goalkeeper, isn't it, mate? With what's in front of you, etc., etc. But, hey, listen, we can always look forward to the game after Leeds and Watford. If ever there's a chance to win something, it surely should be against Watford. But that's for another day, and that depends how much the bubble has burst against Leeds on Friday night. But it is intriguing, isn't it? Because you can see them conceding, but you can see us conceding more. And the big worry is, are we going to score three, which it might take with them scoring, because we haven't got the strikers to do that.
Just before we talk about the defensive issues Leeds have got, because as I mentioned at the start, I spoke to Joe Donoghue, who covers Leeds home and away, so we'll hear from him in just a moment. I just want to ask you, John, the likes of Joe White, Dylan Stevenson have been promoted to the first team. Two players who a lot is expected of. would you give them a chance against Leeds? Would you try and bed them in? Would you just try something different to see if Newcastle can turn this around?
I think you've got to try something different because we've tried every conceivable formation with the senior players. What you can't do is throw too many kids in at the same time because it's unfair on the kids. If that happens and you get beat six and kids get absolutely depressed, they're probably thrown on the scrap heap and not seen again for another few weeks. I mean, the guy Anderson has been so regularly wanting to knocking on the door to play in the first team and or to, because he is ready. And yes, there was the injury at the start of the season that didn't help him. He is the sort of guy that you would want to bring in and say, come on, let's go. There's a lot of people would like to think we shouldn't have let Watts go, who did so well on loan last season at Plymouth and has now gone back out to Wigan. I think that, with hindsight, was possibly a bad move. Playing a centre-forward kid, crikey me, it's hard enough for Wilson the way we play. It would be very, very difficult for a young boy, and you don't want to kill spirit. But you've got to, at some stage, look in your stable and say, there's no thoroughbreds in there, there's a few cart horses. Let's see what we might have with the kids. But bring one kid in at a time, two maximum. Bring too many in, this ship sinks, and mentally, the kids are all at sea.
What we'll do now is hear from Joe Donoghue from Leeds Live. Joe, thank you for popping on. Both sides have had a similar start to the season, but we've just talked on off camera about how the mood is slightly different towards Bielsa than it is to Bruce, despite the fact both clubs are winless so far in this campaign.
Yeah, I think you could probably say Steve Bruce has probably a little bit less credit in the bank than Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds. Obviously, he's kind of a figure which I'd probably compare to what Rafa Benitez was like at Newcastle in terms of, you know, the messaging from the manager in press conferences and stuff like that, that sort of really resonates with the fans at Leeds. Whereas I think, you know, the opposite can be said at times of Steve Bruce, which I think, sort of has rankled with the supporters at times. So, the mood is definitely different. I think there's a great deal more patience with poor results or, you know, poor performances at Leeds, especially when it comes to the manager. I think the players probably take on a little bit more of the flack than the manager in that case. But in his last press conference after the defeat to Liverpool, he wholeheartedly took the blame. I think he said about three or four times that, you know, it's my fault for, you know, I take responsibility for not having our players been able to shine. So, the mood is different, I think it's fair to say. But I think it's a big game for both teams, definitely from Leeds' angle anyway.
Why have this started so badly? I mean, Newcastle have really lacked organisation. Their defence has been terrible. They can't really create. Now they're without Callum Wilson, so the goals are going to be dried up, weren't flowing in the first place. But what about Leeds? Because, you know, they have got this brilliant attack and style, but it just hasn't clicked so far.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that not having clicked or not having gelled is probably the way to summarise it, because even though there haven't been, I mean, there was Daniel James signed on deadline day, there was Junior Firpo who's brought in at left back to replace Alioski. But apart from that, there haven't been any other first team signings. I mean, Jack Harrison came in on a permanent deal after being on loan from Man City for 3 years. But, you know, he'd played over 100 games for Leeds. So it was not a case of, you know, a brand new team having to get to grips with each other. I think it's a case of, you know, just the games have been, they've been strange, because usually you've got all these, you know, really fast rotations out in the wide areas that Leeds go through, and you know, their passing's usually really crisp, and you can usually rely on, you know, one player in particular having a really standout game. Usually that'll be one of Harrison, Bamford, Rafinha or Phillips. And at the moment, it's been difficult to get the ball sort of from the defensive third into the midfield third and then into the final third. And that final ball has been lacking at the moment. And I think some supporters have kind of pinned that on Rodrigo, who's been playing in the middle. And at the moment, with the way that Bielsa sets his team up, it's a 4-1-4-1 most of the time. And the two sort of central midfield players are sort of number eights, or, you know, players similar to sort of like a box to box player, like a Joe Willock. But they're expected to be number 10s as well. So they're expected to, you know, be that attacking midfielder, to be that creative presence. And so far, that's kind of been the missing link. And with the team not being so, you know, with it being so reliant on every player sort of being at their top level, it's difficult when one of those links is a little bit weak, or it's not sort of fulfilling its duty to the fullest of its capabilities. And I think that's kind of led to a few of the performances maybe falling down a bit, conceding a bit too many chances. I think against Liverpool, we saw Joel Matip was able to just steam through the midfield and sort of join Liverpool's forward line and, you know, create numerical advantages there. So, I mean, I don't know if Kieran Clarke will be doing similar, but if he can, you know, try and make some inroads that, up the pitch, then I think that will be one area where Leeds might struggle to contend with the extra bodies.
Is the defence an issue for Leeds? I mean, they've conceded, was it 11 goals? I know Newcastle have conceded 12. I'm just wondering for the neutral, whether that's going to be a good thing or whether they're just going to kind of cancel each other out. And, you know, I mean, I think people are expecting goals, but especially from Leeds. But I mean, as we say, their Leeds have their own defensive issues as well.
I'd say I'd probably compare it to the Newcastle West Ham game in terms of what it will probably, you know, transpire to be like. I wouldn't be surprised if Leeds start fast. I think their aim will be to score early and, you know, really put Newcastle under pressure and sort of ask them the question, say, you know, you have to come out to us and play, rather than sort of Newcastle putting that five at the back and then having, you know, hoping that Leeds can you know, maybe catch them on, sorry, hoping that they maybe can catch Leeds on the counter. I think there will be goals. I think it's fair to say. I mean, Leeds don't play out very many nil-nils or 1-0s. And whenever they do, it's usually they lose 1-0 against a team who've set up to frustrate and, you know, are really good at defending. So I think there definitely will be goals. I think Newcastle have more than enough, even without Callum Wilson, to score. Whether that's, you know, whether they'll have enough to win the game, it's a different question altogether. But I think with the man marking system that Bielsa has and that Leeds sort of play with, I think it's very difficult to shackle a player like Alan Saint-Maximin, because he's constantly, you know, on the move, isn't he? So it's difficult to track him. He's constantly taking players here, there and everywhere. So I think that'll be a bone of contention for Leeds.
Is there a feeling that it will click at some point, and this Friday is probably the game in which Bielsa is targeting, do you think?
I think that there is the hope. Maybe not an assumption. I think there was too much of an assumption going into the Burnley game, which Leeds drew 1-1 and got sort of a last-minute equaliser in. I mean, Leeds beat Burnley 4-0 in May at the back end of last season, and that the assumption was that the same result would happen. I think last year Leeds came onto these Newcastle games on the back of consecutive defeats. I think it was two defeats before the game at Elland Road, which obviously finished 5-2. And then it was three defeats, if you count the FA Cup, in a row, heading into the game in January at St James's. So, in a sense, Newcastle last year were the tonic that Leeds needed to get themselves out of a mini rut. Because they weren't, I mean, in the league, there were not more than two games in a row which Leeds lost last year. So, I think this time around, the hope is definitely that the same can happen. But whether it does, I mean, I think the most important thing is that for Leeds and for Leeds fans is that they want to see an encouraging performance, something which would say, okay, we've turned a corner. We might not have got the result due to, you know, unforeseen circumstances, but we can definitely see, you know, there's life in the old dog yet.
Will Bielsa be aware of the discontent around Newcastle? We know he likes to, you know, he doesn't just focus on the training ground. I'm just wondering, can you give some insight into what Bielsa's mindset will be like? I'm sure he'll be asked about it later in the press conference, and he'll probably, you know, just give one of his short and brief answers and probably play it down if he does answer it. But do you actually think he will be aware of it and will be looking to tap into that discontent? Because it will be, you know, it will be a weapon in Leeds' favour, especially if Leeds do come out early and they score a goal and suddenly the crowd turn, because they're already pretty much over the edge of the cliff. They're just needing that kind of final final push and an early goal would probably do that, and it would be it'll be a horrendous atmosphere. Mm. I think if Leeds get an early goal, will Bielsa be aware of what's going on, do you think?
I mean, with Bielsa, there's no stone left unturned, so I think he will be acutely aware of what's going on, but that's not something which he'll sort of play into his preparation. I think when it comes to preparing for games, he leaves nothing to chance on the pitch. I mean, he's not going to sort of tactically prepare to score early because he wants to turn the fans on the Newcastle's team, that is. He fully believes that whether there's a stadium full of people who are visceral and angry and bloodthirsty or not, that his team can sort of block out that noise and play football the way that they've set up in a principled manner. So I think he will be aware of it, but I'm not sure whether it's something which he'll pay much attention to be honest, because, you know, he always tries to uphold and maintain, you know, what would be, you know, what would he feel if somebody was sort of commenting on his own managerial situation. Like anybody in any job, you wouldn't want somebody else or your sort of your rival or your equal in that position to be saying, oh well, you know, we're gonna try and exploit the ill feeling. I think even if that is sort of in the back of his mind, he won't let on to that.
You know, very respectful indeed. I mean, Leeds are looking to avoid matching a winless top flight run of the 1946-47 season when they finished bottom. Will that play any part? Will he be aware of the stats? Or is he a man who, like you say, he just wants to win every game and the stats and the numbers don't really mean all that much? It's about getting the 3 points regardless.
I think with the length of time that's probably passed between that record and the, you know, the present day and how much has changed, he's probably not going to pay too much attention to that. I think it's at the moment it's the four games winless in the top flight is the worst run that Leeds have been on in sort of the top flight of English football since 1959, and that wasn't brought up, that, you know, in press conferences or anything, because I think everybody knows it would kind of be a bit of a wasted question. It would be a wasted endeavor. There was somebody who asked, you know, how would you assess the start to this season compared to last year, and he pretty bluntly said, you know, you can't compare a 38 game season with four matches, which I think was fair enough to say. You know, there's that you haven't played half, I mean, the vast majority of teams. So there's a few fixtures coming up which Leeds will definitely look at and think, you know, this is where we kick on, because when it comes to December, the fixture list gets really nasty. So the team will know that they need to pick up points, and they need to pick up points as early as possible. And, you know, given the situation that Newcastle are in, it's an opportunity that they'll be looking at and thinking, you know, we want to get something from this, and we want to lay down a marker and say we're not going to be in a relegation dogfight. We're going to be back up in mid-table and consolidating our position.
How is he handling the fact that he hasn't won any games this season? I guess that goes back to the question right at the start. If he was under pressure from the fans, he'd probably be reacting slightly different. Steve Bruce at the moment, you know, we all saw the outburst in the press conference after the Man United game. We'll find out. We're recording this half an hour before Steve Bruce's actual press conference, so we'll wait to see what he has to say later on, and that'll be over on chroniclelive.co.uk. But he's not handling it too well, but I guess that's because he has got the fans. The pressure is, it's just ramping up. It's already pretty high, the lose to Leeds on Friday night. It'll go through the roof, and he'll be well aware of that. How is Bielsa doing?
To be fair with Bielsa, I think he'd probably prepare for any game, regardless of how under pressure he is, exactly the same. You know, he'd assess the opponent. He'd put out the team that he thinks is going to have the best chance of winning the game. You know, he's not... I was saying this yesterday in a piece that, you know, the big question from the fan base is whether he'll continue to persist with Rodrigo, even though he doesn't seem to have gelled in that position that he's been asked to play. And Bielsa's not the type of player to feel burdened or feel the weight of a club record transfer and to feel as though, oh, well, I need to keep playing him, because, you know, he views football in a way which is quite different to most other managers. And you see that in press conferences, the way that he sort of articulates and explains himself is very, it's very precise, which is part of the reason why he still uses a translator, because he wants to convey his ideas to journalists, to players, to everybody in the clearest terms, because he's a football philosopher more than anything. So I think if there was immense pressure and, you know, Leeds were bottom and lost all four games handsomely, then, Yeah, understandably, I think any human being would probably understand and comprehend that, you know, you've got to get a win at some point. But for now, for the most part, I think most people are still, the jury's still out on this season, so the pressure's not too intense. And as a result, I don't think Bielsa would be feeling that pressure too intensely either.
Let's talk about team news then. I mean, the one man who's definitely missing is Pascal Struijk. I hope I've pronounced that right. After his red card against Liverpool, they appealed it. It was upheld. I only saw it for the first time yesterday. And I kind of agree. I don't think it is a red card. I know that injury that came across as horrendous, but it just looked like it coming together rather than anything. It didn't look like he intended to do that. It didn't look malicious to me. How big of a loss is he going to be? And did you think it was a red card?
First and foremost, when it happened in front of us, we all said, you know, that's a great tackle because Harvey Elliott looked to be away and struggled.
Even Martin Tyler did as well. Martin Tyler said, you know, great tackle.
Yeah, and to be fair, Craig Pawson just waves play on until it becomes apparent that, you know, I mean, Mo Salah immediately hands to his head. He's beckoning for medical attention. And then you obviously see the look on Harvey Elliott's face, and it's horrible. I do think that it's one of those where the severity of the injury has been taken into consideration. It's an after the fact sort of red card. I suspected they'd probably make an appeal given the nature of how sort of divisive the decision was. But given the fact that, I mean, even before the game had finished, the Premier League had issued a statement saying that the red card decision was taken because of the endangerment and reckless nature of the tackle. So I thought, you know, if there's any appeal, they've already set out their stall there. They've already said, this is our stance on it. We're backing the referee here. So, he will be a miss. Some fans think that he's one of the better centre-halves at the club. I think centre-half is the best stocked position that Leeds have got. At the moment, as luck would have it, Diego Llorente went off in that game against Liverpool and then was replaced by Struijk. So he's got a hamstring injury, we think, but he said it's not too severe. But based on his injury history from last season, obviously went off after 10 minutes or so against Newcastle. He for injuries which are typically quite minor, he might be out of action for an extended period. Robin Koch is another one who he picked up a minor injury, or we thought it was minor, after the Old Trafford game at the beginning of the season. So he's been out for around a month now. Whether he'll be back, we don't know yet. We'll find out later today from Bielsa on that injury front. But Liam Cooper's the club captain. He's pretty much a mainstay in there. And then Luke Ayling will probably shuffle across from right back. And it might be a different story if it was someone like Emil Kraft shuffling across, but Luke Ayling has played that position quite frequently. He's quite adept in that role. I wouldn't say that it's ideal, but it's not the end of the world if Ayling does have to shuffle across if Struijk, Koch and Llorente are out. So there will be opportunities to exploit them because they're both the players who were, you know, Leeds in Leeds back four in the Championship. But I think Cooper and Ayling should have enough about them.
It's probably not the end of the world given Newcastle's failure to really score any goals, and given the fact that Callum Wilson is likely to be missing this game, Newcastle, you know, Joe Linton is not going to give the Leeds United defenders a tough time, in my opinion. You know, hopefully I'm proved wrong from Newcastle point of view on Friday, but I can't see if Steve Bruce does go with Joe Linton, him really giving Leeds anything to worry about. I would prefer to see the formation change and Dwight Gayle slotted in, and the team built around Dwight Gayle to give them a bit more of a attacking intent, but I can't see that happening. But it'll be interesting to see the team from both sides. Just some quick fire questions before we finish from questions from our viewers here. Mm-hmm. Who is the key man that Newcastle United need to stop?
I'd probably say Calvin Phillips. It'd be tempting to say Rafinha because he's the game changer. But if you can nullify Calvin Phillips, then the team cannot get out of defence and transition to attack. If you put a man on him which is difficult because he's very good at doing that. He's very good at sort of man marking people out of the game, but his distribution is something which will cause Newcastle problems. You know, Jack Harrison on the left and Rafinha on the right. They both will stretch the pitch, and Phillips can find them both. And you know, if one of them is taking sort of a defender out of the game, then he can find Patrick Bamford with a ball over the top or a through ball. So I think Phillips is probably the key man.
What's the biggest weakness that Newcastle can exploit?
Biggest weakness, probably the midfield, in front of Calvin Phillips. It's been the issue of contention so far this season. If Rodrigo's in there, there's the perception that he doesn't really know when to press or when to, you know, or where to position himself. So, you know, there've been times where he's maybe been a bit too advanced and there's just been a huge, huge gap between the defense and the attack. So if somebody can, you know, make inroads in that position, I think that's where Newcastle can potentially hurt Leeds.
And who are you most fearing from a Newcastle United point of view?
It has to be St. Maximin. I think that just the ability that he has to, you know, he's a one-man counter-attack, isn't he? To just carry the team up the pitch 20, 30 yards at a time. I mean, we saw what he did to Declan Rice on that side with the step-overs one way, then the next. I think that, you know, there's not too many defenders who'd be able to shackle him on their own in this league.
Well, we've got a question here from Roger Cuckoo, who's a regular viewer of the Everything Is Back My podcast, and he asks you, Joe, do you think Alan St. Maximin will get double man marked out of the game, or at least that's the attempt?
I don't think you'll get double man marked because the lead system is man for man, so it's every player has their man that they need to mark or at least need to shadow. So doubling up on St. Maximin would leave another player free, and that's not something that Bielsa is going to allow, I think. So maybe in sort of when he stops and starts doing the tricks and the step overs and stuff, but not in sort of open play, not in transition, nothing like that.
You can see we've got a few people there saying Alan St. Maximin needs to do a bit more of end product. I kind of agree with that. I think sometimes decision making lacks that kind of experience of a player who's a wee bit older. We've got Alan here saying Newcastle are so predictable. I don't think Leeds have too much to worry about, and the lack of attacking options won't give Leeds sleepless nights. We've sort of said that, but yeah, again. And I guess, what do you think the score is going to be then? Will Leeds come out on top here?
I mean, Lee Ryder was speaking to us on the Blue, White and Yellow podcast yesterday, and he and I both went with the same prediction, which was, I think it'll be a 3-1 Leeds. I think both teams will score. I think there'll be periods of the game where Newcastle are on top, just purely because Leeds, you know, I think it's difficult for any team to dominate possession at the intensity that Leeds play for 90 minutes. But I think there'll be periods in the game where it's quite even. But I do think that it's probably going to be a 3-1 to Leeds, because we saw it at Elland Road last year, you know, once Leeds get, you know, that whiff of or sniff of blood, then they'll not stop attacking. You know, it's not a case of getting to the 70th minute and then thinking, all right, we've got a lead, let's hold on to it. It's, you know, let's improve the goal difference here. Let's stay to the playing to the principles. And that's to play forward at every opportunity.
Yeah, I'm sure Sky are hoping that they've got an absolutely brilliant game on Friday night. Of course, it'll be in our live blogs on both the Leeds Live website and chroniclelive.co.uk. We'll have another match preview with John Gibson to talk a bit more about Newcastle United later in the day. So please do tune in for that one. Joe, thanks for popping on to Everything Is Black and White podcast. Safe trip up to Tyneside. And hopefully from a Newcastle United point of view, it's a dreadful Friday night for you guys.
Cheers.
So there we have it, Joe Donoghue from Leeds Live. We talked about the defensive issues Leeds have got, but also the attack and talent that could harm Newcastle, and how he thought, John, it'll end up like the first game at St James's Park, which was Newcastle versus West Ham. Plenty of goals. He does think Leeds will concede, but he thinks Leeds will come out on top. I tell you what, he also mentioned that he thinks Leeds will go early. It's going to be a horrendous atmosphere of Leeds getting an early goal, isn't it?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, that is the big worry for Newcastle, and it's an even bigger worry for Steve Bruce. And it could become very toxic, and if it does become toxic, then it's difficult for Newcastle to get back in the game. So, yes, and that they will come at us right from the start. The press very, very high. They're a poor man's entertainers. When I say a poor man, they haven't the rise and rise of the entertainers under Keegan was nosebleed. It went from the 1 foot in the third division to second top of the Premier League in a blink of an eye. Their rise hasn't been as quick as that, but it has been relentless. Last season was terrific. The manager, Bielsa, is a bit like Keegan. You know, if we let in three, we'll attempt to score four and we'll believe we can score four. So it's the same sort of philosophy, if you like. And yes, they've had a very bad start this season. They can't defend set pieces. You've got a real chance there. But it must be said that, you know, we have played Manchester United and got well cuffed. They've not only played Manchester United, but played Liverpool as well. So two of their four games have been the big hitters. So the position could be false, their position.
It's interesting you mentioned Bielsa, and we spoke about it with Joe there in his little chat with me, that the mood's totally different regarding Bielsa than it is Bruce, despite the similarities in the start. And I guess, John, that's down to progress, because Leeds United fans have seen progress under Bielsa. And
absolutely.
I mean, I'm still sitting here, I don't know about you, scratching my head, thinking, what is Newcastle United's identity? I can see little bits of it, but I can't see full-on progress like Leeds United fans have seen. And I guess that's the key. That's why there's no discontent rising at the moment, because they have confidence in their manager that it will turn around.
Yeah, I think the fans, they see... When you think how long they were in the doldrums, going down to the old third division, the third tier, if you like, and the length of time they spent in the Championship, a huge, huge club with a passionate following. They were so grateful to come up. They had such a terrific season last season. They've got a coach who all the other managers in the league look up to. Everybody from Pep Guardiola to the guy at Paris Saint-Germain, they all talk with reverence about the guy that sits on the bucket. And the fans are going to stay with that. He's their type of... If Keegan, he has the following that Benitez had here. Played a different style, hugely. He's much more front foot than Rafa was, but... The fans believed in him, and a couple of results is not going to change that. Certainly the atmosphere within their dressing room before the game and within our dressing room before the game, it'll be hugely different. The atmosphere on the terraces, the fear that will be in Newcastle fans and the optimism that'll be in the Leeds fans in their end will be in huge contrast.
I feel like I ask this question every single preview episode. Can you guess what it's going to be?
Well, I can guess the theme it's on. Go on.
How crucial is this game for Steve Bruce and Newcastle United?
Yeah. Well, for a start, until Newcastle United and Steve Bruce gets a win, every game is absolutely massive to us. But we may as well ask that 38 times a season, because every single game, this will go all the way, this relegation fight. We're going to be in that. We're not going to be mid-table by November and stay mid-table for the rest of the season. It isn't going to be one. The lack of action in the transfer market has made certain of that, that it's going to be a relegation fight, and it's going to be... the six-pointer every time Newcastle play. And it's sad. It's the life we live in at the moment, and there's no way around it. It's just ironic that when we get a handful of decent players, the centre-forward we get is a crock. I mean, how ridiculous can it get, you know? I mean... Bless him, and I mean, I am a huge fan of Wilson. But I mean, he can end up as injury prone as Andy Carroll if we're not careful. And however good he is, if he misses a huge chunk of his season, he's no good to us during that time, because he ain't present. He is a super, super player, but we know... We've got to accept that he's... And doesn't that make not having a backup striker more outrageous? I mean, not only was I talking about, it was everybody. Every Newcastle fan was shouting the same thing. Now, if they can see it, how Ashley can't see, and Steve Bruce in this case, because Steve Bruce told us we don't need one because he's got Al Mirren and he's got San Maximum and he's got Joe Linton. Well, how many goals are they going to score for us? Like, you know, and they're not centre forwards. They're not centre forwards.
Yeah, we're about to see if Mike Ashley's gamble is indeed going to backfire. As usual, John, we'll wrap up then with the results prediction. I got it right this week. I usually ask for a score prediction, then you correct it. Results prediction.
Yes, that is correct. Well, dear me, it is so hard. And the longer it goes on, you just don't want to keep saying Newcastle will lose.
We both got it right last week against Manchester United.
Yeah, but that was quite an easy one, to be truthful. I think we both had a vague idea, especially Ronaldo's debut. I mean, he had two kicks and two goals before we got going, to a certain extent. I mean, I can easily see we're losing. I would like to say we can draw. I don't see us winning without Wilson.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to go for a defeat, and I think it'll be by quite a heavy number. But hopefully I'm wrong. You can head over to chroniclelive.co.uk to catch all the build-up, all the words from Steve Bruce's press conference, and of course, the match live through our live blog tomorrow, 8 p.m. kickoff over on chroniclelive.co.uk. And please remember to like and subscribe.